know, we just kept sort of saying that we'll give it 6 months, and if it doesn't happen in 6 months, then we'll do, maybe it wasn't meant to be. But things would always be happening where I, you know, we especially when getting signed. I mean, they were, you know, the record companies could see that everybody loved us, but they, there had been no female band that had been successful on a massive scale. There had been the Runaways and, of course, Fanny, but it was all kind of cult, you know, on a cult level. So it was frustrating, but I don't think we were ever down about it. We just thought, well, maybe it's not meant to be. And but like I said, like something would come out of the blue that would happen that would encourage us to sort of keep with it. So it was very exciting times, I have to say. It was against all odds, something like that happening was a pretty, it's an incredible story.
Hey, everybody, that is Belinda Carlisle, lead singer for the Go-Go's. She's out on a tour she's got coming up, and a solo tour, and I was really excited to talk to her. Before we get to more on that, May 5th and 6th, I'm going to be at the Omaha Funny Bone. So if you're in the Omaha area, come on out. Been a while since I've been back. Love the club. May 5th and 6th, go online. Tickets are on my website, paulmercurio.com. But yeah, that's Belinda Carlisle talking about starting out as the Go-Go's in the punk scene in LA in the 70s. And, you know, it's a groundbreaking band because it's all female. The only all-female band that wrote all their own songs, played all their own instruments. And she's talks about just, you know, the struggles, the glass ceiling, the whole bit, and, you know, just breaking through. And we talk about her solo work. I was really excited to talk to her because I'm a big fan. And you're going to hear in the interview that, you know, my wife and I, when we were dating, you know, loved partying to their music and making out to their music. And yeah, she's like, how can you make out to the Go-Go's music? It's kind of fast tempo, whatever. And it's like, trust me, there's a lot of positions you can assume, especially in your mother's Oldsmobile in the parking lot of Mary Annie's funeral home in Providence, Rhode Island, where we grew up. Yes, a funeral home. Hey, it's at night. Nobody's around. It's a big parking lot. Make all the noise you want. It's a funeral home. You ain't going to wake anybody up. They're pretty much sleeping the whole time. All right, listen, enjoy the podcast. Tell your friends about the podcast. Spread the word. And go to Apple, leave some nice things to say about it. I hope to see you in Omaha, and follow me on all the platforms at Paul Mercurio on social media. Enjoy Belinda Carlisle, everybody. I did. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. Very excited to have my guest on. Belinda Carlisle, lead vocalist of the Go-Go's, the most successful all-female rock band of all time. And by the way, I want to thank you because I danced a lot and made out to your music to my wife in the day. Belinda's an amazing solo artist as well. She has more than 20 top charting global singles from 5 different albums, reaching gold, platinum, and multi-platinum. And it's so great to have you on.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm glad that you had many makeout sessions to my music.
Yeah, absolutely. Not yeah. You know, you really helped me solidify the deal with getting married. So I owe you. So now you have a tour coming up in the summer, starting July 1st, right, called Decades, and the new EP Kismet, which is coming out Friday, May 12th, along with a new single, Big Big Love, which I listened to and is really great. But just so people know, where can they find the tour schedule? Where can they go online to check out what you do and where you're going to be?
I think probably my Facebook page is probably the best thing. I don't know. I mean, I find those Ticketmaster and all those websites is totally confusing, but they're probably on there. But for a good comprehensive list of where I'm performing, I'd say go to my Facebook page.
Cool. So in this latest round of work that you're doing, you teamed up with Diane Warren, the great songwriter. And I was curious, you'd worked with her quite a while ago and then ran into her in a coffee shop, I think, and started up again. And how did that come about? And like, why does this process work so well with you and Diane?
Well, I don't know. Well, there's a few questions there. Well, the first, I was planning on retiring. I wasn't planning on doing this really anymore, or just doing it, you know, taking work few and far between, just having a nice life, quiet life. And my son ran into her at, I think, a Starbucks. And she said, what is your mom doing? And let's call her. And in her Diane fashion. And because she swears a lot. And they called me and she goes, get down to studio. I have some hits for you. And I thought, oh my God, do I really want to do this? Open this door. Because it's a big commitment doing something like this and doing it, you know, well. And I thought, well, as a courtesy, I'll just sit down to the studio. And I just had it in my brain that it wasn't going to happen until I heard the music. And I thought, oh my God, this is amazing. And yes, I want to do this. And that's how it happened. So hence the name of the EP is called Kismet, because it was kismet and magical and by happenstance this whole project happened.
This sounds like Al Pacino in Godfather 3 in the kitchen when he goes, just when I was out, they pull me back in. Like you.
Exactly.
So why were you sort of moving on to retirement, and what was it that grabbed you so powerfully in the tracks that you heard or the songs that you saw?
You know, well, for me, with music, it's always been black or white. I know what I like, and I know what will work. And so when I heard those songs, it got me really excited. And I, you know, the past 15 years, I mean, I've just kind of done weird projects and not projects that weren't commercial, like my French album. And I did an album of Kirtan, like mantra, because I chant every day. And then with the French album, I lived in France for 25 years. So I just thought the idea of doing English-speaking pop, been there, done that. I didn't really think, I expect anything to come along that would really make me excited. And really, that's just what happened. It's the music itself. And I love Diane. I mean, as outside of what she does, she's a great person, and you know, we have a lot of fun together. So so this is how this whole thing happened.
That's so great. And that's how some of the best stuff being in the creative world happens. You know, it's I've written on different shows, The Daily Show, and we would sit in a room and try to come up with ideas and beat your head against the wall, and then just some side thing comes out of somebody's mouth, and that's the thing, you know, and that's exactly. The best stuff where it happens organically, which I'm sure is the process in songwriting too. I'm not a songwriter. I have no musical talent whatsoever, but you said about Diane, you said Diane's songwriting is both a joy and a mystery to me. She makes it look so easy where I imagine it must be unbelievably hard, but I mean, I know you weren't writing most of the songs in the Go-Go's, but you've written songs over the years. And what is it about songwriting that can be so hard for people who don't do it and don't know how to do it? And what is it that you think Diane has that seems to be so easy to her?
Oh, speaking for myself, I've always had to collaborate. I've never been able, well, with the exception of one song where I was able to sit down and write, you know, like a lyrics in about 5 minutes to a really good song that wasn't a hit, and then did the music, since I'm not musically trained, singing into a phone and trying to show somebody major, minor, or whatever. But with Diane, she's so prolific and prolific in different genres. So I really don't know how she does it. I mean, but it is her life. I mean, that is her life. So I think she just lives and breathes the creative process. And she's kind of like a really magical person and kind of ethereal and otherworldly. So, you know, she probably is constantly living in the quantum soup and just picking it up. You know, I don't know.
But yeah.
Whatever it is, it works, and it's worked for since I've known her. And I met her when she was working out of a tiny little room in a high rise on Sunset with floor to ceiling cassette tape stack. And then now she owns that building, and she built another building on Cahuenga. So she has, you know, she's incredibly.
Sounds like a real estate mogul.
No, exactly. And it's just the work ethic is I've never met anybody with that kind of work ethic.
Yeah. So you mentioned the quantum field. I mean, the only person I've talked to that mentioned that, there's a guy, Dr. Joe Dispenza, that I I read, that's I him. Listen to his videos. And do you know him?
Yeah.
And I've been working with somebody that's sort of helping me sort of, I have a problem with staying present and in the moment. I'm either ruminating about the past or worrying about the future. And so, and you mentioned chanting and do you meditate daily and how does the chanting and all, how does that help you in your life?
Oh yeah. I have a big practice. I mean, I start off with a great teacher like a Joe Dispenza or a Ram Dass or a Eckhart Tolle, you know, which would be great for you staying in the now. But, and then I go from that to, well, I'm on a year long, they call it Kriya or meditation now, where chanting is like meditation. And, you know, when you chant, you activate the meridian points on the roof of your mouth. So it's actually a very physical and scientific thing. So, and not all airy-fairy like anybody would think, but, and I do a lot of breath work too, which I'm addicted to, pranayama, which is breath work. So I have a whole thing now, which really does work. And it, I think, and I remember a teacher telling me, like when I started having a really consistent practice, and, you know, and I do a lot of mindfulness work and like now this Ram Dass book that I'm reading, it's just like, you know, I never get enough of that kind of stuff and, you know, quantum soup and, you know, quantum physics, but put into sort of layman's terms, which is all what these teachers are talking about, but just in their own way. So, but it changed. My teacher said that just one day you're going to wake up and your whole, the way you perceive life has changed. And that kind of happened to me. He's like, he warned me because it was going to be confusing and because I wouldn't really fit into the old way of doing things and not really feel fitting into the new way of doing things, which is exactly what happened. It was very uncomfortable for a couple of years. And now I'm kind of, I just, you know, and I say, well, what do I do? And she said, well, you can't go back. You can only go forward, which is what I did with my practice. So it's a very daily intense practice. It goes from 40 minutes to 2 hours every day, every single day.
Wow.
Without missing a day. So, wow. I love it. I can't imagine my life without it, to be perfectly honest. Yeah. So,
yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean about it taking a while to adjust. It's like you're retraining yourself to think and be a different way. And just real quick, what, just not to get too off the beaten path, but there's a good book. I work with this guy named Peter Lafredo, and he has a book called Full Permission Living, which has the influences of Joe and other things that we're talking about. You may want to check it out, but it's really helpful. So what do you in this new set of work here, are there some themes you're trying to convey? I mean, Big Love, what was the inspiration for that? It's such a big song and bright. What place were you writing from or collaborating from with Diane? And like, what are you trying? Is there anything you're trying to sort of get out or convey in some of these songs?
Not really. I mean, it's a good basic pop song. I mean, I always thought that it would be difficult for me to do English speaking pop at my age, because I've been there. I mean, I've had so many experiences, and I thought, well, on that, I'm going to have to find lyrics that sort of fit with where I'm at in my life. And I sort of had a change of heart with that, where I've had so many experiences where I can sing about different types of love, or, you know, put myself in whatever my space that the lyrics are trying to convey. So with each song, it's a little bit different. So but I think as far as any grand message and any sort of, you know, thing we're trying to get across to people, I would say there really isn't anything except it's just sort of, you know, straightforward pop singing about universal love. And you could take that love and do it on a sort of a human level or on a quantum level, actually, too, if you want, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, I it's funny, I mentioned to you off air that just recently, my wife and I saw the Go-Go documentary on Showtime, and we were huge fans of the band, and just I thought it was so well done and told a lot about you guys. And I just can't imagine how hard it was. It's hard enough to break as an artist, especially in a band. I think it's particularly hard because you're only as good as your weakest link. And then on top of it, it's all female. And I would imagine, you know, that there's that glass ceiling and not being taken seriously. And like, What was that like then for you guys? And when did you start to know that, okay, this thing could stick? I mean, you guys are writing your own songs, playing all your own instruments, which was usually not the case for an all-female band. But like, was there that moment? Because any artist that keeps hitting their head against the wall, but you guys are like big time because hitting your head against the wall because you're all female. And so I'm sure you're facing all sorts of stereotypes and all of that.
Right. Well, you know, we just kept sort of saying that we'll give it 6 months. And if it doesn't happen in 6 months, then we'll do, maybe it wasn't meant to be. But things would always be happening where, especially when getting signed, I mean, the record companies could see that everybody loved us, but there had been no female bands that had been successful on a massive scale. There'd been the Runaways and, of course, Fanny, but it was all kind of cult, you know, on a cult level. So it was frustrating, but I don't think we were ever down about it. We just thought, well, maybe it's not meant to be. But like I said, like something would come out of the blue that would happen that would encourage us to sort of keep with it. So very exciting times, I have to say. It was against all odds, something like that happening was a pretty, it's an incredible story.
Yeah, it really is. And what did it do for you to open for the Police? Like, obviously it's exposure, but was there anything to learn from that? Well, I mean, I know you're in it and you guys are partying and it's the whole scene and whatever, and you're going 100 miles an hour. So I would imagine, you know, it's going by pretty fast. But in looking back, was that, to me, seemed to be one of the pivotal points for you guys?
Looking back, I mean, we had no expectations that we were going to, you know, knock the Police out of number one to number six. And but I think that, right, you know, being able to do that without the kind of pressure of being a headliner, we really, between that and being and touring in the UK, we were really able to sort of hone our skills, because we just learned about our instruments as we went along. We weren't trained, any of us, with the exception of Charlotte, in any way. So the more we played, the better we got, and the more powerful we were on stage. So I think that's, you know, that was, but that was a huge turning point. There were a lot of turning points for that band. So, but that was one of them, that all of a sudden we went from being this little punk band to exploding and, you know, being the number one band in America in the course of only 2.5 years. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's what really struck home in watching the documentary, is how fast it happened and just what that was like. And then the LA punk scene in the 70s had to be pretty amazing. And one of you described it as like a freeing experience where there were no rules, no limitations. You could do whatever you want. Right. And but for that scene, right, maybe you guys don't come together, right? I mean,
I don't think, if it hadn't been for that scene, I'm not sure that the Go-Go's would ever happen, because that allowed anyone to be a musician or think they're a musician and learn as they went along, and you could get booked. I really don't think with the Go-Go's would never have happened. That was such an amazing time in music, and we knew we were experiencing something that doesn't come along too often.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, listen, you have your tour starting in the summer in Atlanta. It starts July 1st. People can go online to your Facebook page, find the dates. Kismet is coming out along with the single that will be a hit, Big Big Love. And it's really great to talk to you, and such an admirer of your work and all that you've done over the years. It's not easy to do what you did. So I wish you the best of luck, and it's looking forward to maybe seeing you live maybe one of these days, and I'll scream to you from the audience, "This is my wife who I made out to with thanks you." But you guys are great.
It was so great talking to you. Thank you so much.
All right, there you go. Belinda Carlisle. Awesome. Awesome. So glad that she's still out there making music. Hope you enjoyed it. Please go to Apple, leave some nice reviews, tell your friends about the podcast. Hope to see you all May 5th and 6th at the Omaha Funny Bone.